Welcome to the WP Tonic This Week in WordPress and SaaS podcast, where Jonathan Denwood interviews the leading experts in WordPress, e-learning, and online marketing to help WordPress professionals launch their own SaaS.
Welcome back, folks, to the WP Tonic This Month in WordPress and Tech. It's our monthly roundtable show. This is episode 907. We've got a great panel here. We've got a special guest. Unfortunately, Tom von Conversio couldn't join us this month. He is dealing with an emergency, but hopefully he might join us in the next month. A great friend of the show. We got Kevin Gehry, the evangelist for Gutenberg. We've got the normal panel. We've got some great stories. We're going to be talking about the DOJ having a bit of a go at Apple. We're going to be talking about Quickly. We're going to be talking about maybe the most boring post ever to be put on the WP Tavern. I'll let the panel decide that. I'm going to let the panel introduce themselves and we'll go straight into the show. So let's start with our guest, Kevin. Kevin, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Kevin Gehry. I'm the founder of Automatic CSS and a product called Frames. And I have a group for agency owners. I think we're over like 1,500 agency owners now. And that's it. I teach WordPress. I teach web design best practices and I build software.
Are you already regretting and agreeing to come on this, Kevin?
No, we're going to have fun today. I just wasted my entire morning on a fatal error in Gutenberg where you can't style CSS based on page post type, but that was fun.
Yeah, imagine. I think you're seen as the antichrist of Gutenberg.
Probably. Sure. Gutenberg.
All right. I've got my friend Chris Badger. He's been traveling, been seeing the Far East. It's a rough life, isn't it, Chris? So would you like to introduce yourself, Chris?
Yeah, I'm Chris from Lifter LMS for selling and teaching online. And then I have a podcast for course creators and WordPress pros called LMS Cast.
I have the only Spencer Forum here. Spencer, would you like to introduce yourself?
It's Spence from WPLaunchify.com. I'm wearing compression stockings.
Yeah, it's too much detail too early in the morning, really. But there we go. Kurt, my beloved co-host. Kurt, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Kurt von Annen. I'm not wearing any compression socks at all. And I own a company called Manana No Mas, focused largely on membership and learning websites.
That's fantastic. Hopefully, maybe Heather will join us. I didn't realize last month, beloved panel, she was in Antarctica. She was broadcast. It's the only guest I've had on the show that's actually joined us live from Antarctica. She was actually looking out the mirror at her fans, her penguin fans. So there we go. So let's go straight into it. I've got the most important part of the show, folks. I've got a couple messages from our sponsors, our beloved sponsors. We will be back in a few moments, folks.
Tired of hosting providers that can't handle high traffic loads? Conversio is here to help. Our platform can handle any amount of traffic, all without slowdown or crashing. With immediate Slack support, performance optimization, and a team that thrives on resolving technical challenges, your e-commerce business is in safe hands. Learn more about Conversio at conversio.com.
Hi there, tribe. It's Jonathan here, and I want to tell you about OmaSend. OmaSend is a great plugin that delivers SMS messaging and email messaging to your clients. If you're building a woo solution for your client and you're looking to provide a SMS functionality for them and great email
Why don't you look at OmniSend? Got a great special deal. You can go to wp-tonic.com/deals and they're offering 30% off the first 3 months. Plus, if you need any technical help or a migration, they're offering almost $1,000 to help migrate if you've got a group of clients that are looking for this type of service. It's a great offer. They're a great company. I highly recommend them to you. So, like I say, go over to the deals page on the WP Tonic website and you'll find more details there. Speak to you soon, folks. Bye. We're coming back, folks. I want to point out I've got a fabulous offers from the sponsors, plus a curated list of the best WordPress plugins and services for the WordPress professional. You can get all these goodies by going over to wp-tonic.com/deals. wp-tonic.com/deals. What more could you ask for? Probably a lot more, but that's all you can get.
$1.
Yeah, exactly, $1. There we are. The voice of reason has spoken. So off we go. So, number one, surprising tech trends in WordPress and beyond. So, Chris, I thought there was something I could really make my mind up about this piece, but I think it had some insights. I'm not sure I'm the brightest tool to see them. So what did you think of this particular article and what did you get from it, Chris?
I don't think it was that surprising, but it is good to look at the data of what's going on in the ecosystem. The main thing that jumped out at me is that we're kind of in a mature industry and people don't just right away stop using older technology. So I always find it interesting how many people are using old versions of PHP and WordPress and really any tool. But technological change is always slow. It's not fast. So it looks... And there's so many competitors now for CMSs and all the different categories of tools. It's sort of like peak tech. But what I see in this data is also population demographics. So if the world of people is not growing super fast, you know, technology is like really saturated. And yes, there are new people coming online and using tools, but we don't have the explosive population growth. In some countries, population sizes are declining. So there's only so many people to use so many tools. And it just looks to me, if you look at the business life cycle, like we're kind of toppy with a lot of the technology listed in this article, which means that it's just, in terms of up and to the right growth, like WordPress already has 46% of the internet. I think it's going to be really hard to get to 50 or 55. But that's also okay. There's only so many people and only so many websites. And obviously, you've got the pressure from AI and other tools. But I think what's really important to remember that a lot of, like when people started using iPhones and smartphones, a lot of people for a long time still use flip phones. And just like we have online education, people still use books, textbooks, classrooms. So we're just in like a mature part of the cycle. WordPress is not a startup anymore.
Right, to you all. So Kevin, I think the figures around React were interesting. And the situation around Shopify and WooCommerce. But I don't know, what did you get anything that kind of got you interested in this particular outline document?
Like Chris, I didn't see anything that really stood out that was surprising, right? I do think that Shopify obviously dominates the e-commerce space. I feel like WordPress is going to have a hard time clawing any of that away from them anytime soon based on things that are happening in WordPress. Yeah, nothing surprises me here. It's just, it is good to see WordPress remaining dominant, you know, continuing to grow.
Yeah, I think that's
that's the really good news, actually. So, Spencer, anything kind of took your eye in the feast of data supplied in this article?
Did anybody else notice how the stats on all of these things flatlined after 2021 peak? So almost everything, even WordPress, I'm looking at it, React even. There's nothing that there's an exception to that I can see, unless I'm wrong here. Almost everything, at best, went up, and then somewhere around March of 2021, just they pulled the plug. Flatlines, maybe drops and flatlines. So I don't know if that's an indication of the saturation, but I think it's an indication of the fact that we obviously had the COVID and all the people like going to start working from home, figuring out if they want to do whatever. But the technology itself also, because I know Kevin and I share an affinity for like old school stuff, right? With getting your hands in the CSS and stuff. So it seems to me that the trend I'm seeing is there are tools that do stuff automatically, but then there's the craftsman tools. And I think that there's like going to be a resurgence of craftsmanship of people who really know what they're doing, getting under the hood again, because the majority of everybody else is just going to say, hey, AI, make me a website. And I don't know if that's reflective in these trends, but like I spoke the other day to a pal who's a Drupal professional. First of all, nothing funnier than a guy, his company makes a really good, I mean, they make a good business. They're like the people that do really.
You do this every month. You get me started hot and bothered. I was in a reasonably good mood. And
what did I say that bothered you?
Drupal.
Oh, well, because the point of the Drupal is, if you look, I had a joke with them because this doesn't show the graph, but if you look at WordPress, it's like 44-ish%. And Drupal and Joomla are like 1.1%. And I said, how can they afford to pay you? Well, the reason is because there's an entire industry of legacy enterprise customers who had stuff built on Drupal who can't disconnect. And they're the ones who are going to need craftsmen. They're the ones that are going to need that kind of stuff. And I think that that's true with WordPress as well. There will be the one button automatic push it and it goes. And then there'll be the people who care enough to understand what a CSS framework is.
I don't think they're going to need a craftsman. I think they're going to need a phone line to God. That's what I think. But that's my opinion.
Well, there's no other way to explain like the flat line, right? Because the world is not shrinking. It's just, where else is everybody going? They're either not doing websites or we just all exhausted ourselves on the tools and we have every toy there is now and we're just asking AI to do it for us. Or the stats are wrong.
I just think it's a mixture of it. I mean, so Kurt, anything kind of struck your eye in this deluge of data?
Well, without running off into some weird tangent about, you know.
Oh, please do. That's this the whole
about, you know, vaccine injuries and unexplained deaths after 2022 and declining populations. Without going that way, I kind of agree with Spencer a little bit. And that is, I think there's going to be a resurgence in some craftsmanship. I was just having this discussion over coffee with my wife this morning in other fields about copywriting and things like that. But the other side of the coin that Chris mentioned is right. I mean, I actually feel kind of secure in the idea that I chose WordPress and WordPress is extremely dominant and there's a huge part of the market there. And even as AI grows, it's going to be the experts and the craftsmen and the people that can still think things through manually that I think are going to be able to go, okay, I know how this works and I know what my core tools are and I'm going to be able to move forward.
Yeah.
Well, and I think it's secure. I think it lends a little piece of security to what we do.
Yeah. On to the next story. The Department of Justice is getting a little bit serious by the looks of it with Apple. So we've got a legal mind here, kind of. So Spencer,
I didn't see the link for this. So
no, it was you could put the title in and it's on The Verge. What do you think about this, Spencer, about the Department of Justice going for Apple? Do you think they're going to get anywhere?
Well, here's the problem. The problem is that, and again, when I was younger and in law school, we studied antitrust from the turn of the century, like the railroad barons and stuff, right? So the problem is that in those days, you know, you could physically see the railroad track and you could see, okay, this is who owns it and we have to divide this up and so forth. It was really black and white. With technology, it really isn't that easy. For example, my father and I think one other friend of mine are the only two humans I know on the planet that don't have iPhones, right? An iPhone has this walled garden that's crept up on it. Kurt, too rich. Is this walled garden that's crept up where everything from FaceTime to the iCloud to whatever, you know, other things like, for example, authentication of apps. If you try to install an app, it says, do you want to use your iCloud account? Like, those are really insidious monopolies because you can't just unplug people without causing almost as much harm as good. And I think that's where the problem of all this lies is, like, look at the behavior of billionaire trillionaires or somebody like Apple with $100 trillion in the bank. Compare it to some of our recent ex-presidents and what they're doing now. Like, just let's start a company, get $5 billion. Like, they have so much money, they can crush any resistance from, you know, from the DOJ or whomever. They can just outspend, outlast, outmaneuver it. That's my concern. I mean, if we even care, to be honest, because Jack Arturo was commenting on Twitter this morning about something about there was Vulture was made some comment that, you know, all your data is ours, but it was an old statement. And Jack said what I felt, which was like, do you really care at this point? Like, do you think that anybody's not scraping every single thing you've ever put on the internet? And I think that's kind of what a lot of people feel.
Yeah. So, Kevin, I've got such mixed feelings about this because I think some I've just listened to a few commentary podcasts that I trust, and I think there's some aspects of the case that has traction, but there's other bits which I think they're going to find it hard work to persuade a judge to go along with it. So do you think this is just going to end up in this kind of pre-court settlement scenario? I'd imagine so, but who knows? What's your own feelings about this, Kevin?
I don't know. My feeling is, if you're going to tell me a crime has been committed, like, you have to show me a victim. And who is the victim of Apple in this scenario? Has this been outlined yet? You know, where has Apple hurt somebody?
Well, I think the only area where, I think there's two areas where they've got some tricky territory, but you might be totally right. The two areas where they might find things a bit tricky is the right for repair, which they have bended slightly, but by what I've read, they've been kind of forced into enabling people to repair their own computer. And I think the biggest area where they've got problems is this 30% that if you want to sell something on their phone and their operating system, you've got to cough up 30%. I think that 30%, because they got sued quite a lot of money in the Europe for that, one day's of profit, I actually think, for Apple. So I think it was the...
If I don't want to participate in Apple's ecosystem, I mean, there's nothing stopping me from not participating in Apple's ecosystem, right? Like, I do have options. So by definition, it doesn't meet any sort of real monopolistic standard, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's very easy for me to just not participate in Apple's ecosystem, right? And if I do want to participate in Apple's ecosystem, then I guess I have to, it's their ecosystem. So if they want to do 30% on apps or whatnot, then that's what you're agreeing to do by being in the ecosystem. But there are other ecosystems. So, you know, again, to me, it's, show me on the doll where Apple hurts you. It's like, you know, it's your choice to do it or not do it.
Sorry, Spence,
I just want to add something. I agree with Kevin's principle, but the rules that the Department of Justice are following, these antitrust acts, don't look for victims. What they look for is government control or regulation over a marketplace where one party has so much of a monopoly that it essentially prevents any competition from happening. And so your principle is correct, but let's say 99% of people said, F it, I don't care, I'm going to use Apple or not. The government looks at it like, there's no other competition that could ever get into that market. And therefore, ultimately, it becomes unhealthy because the government doesn't own or control Apple, but Apple essentially controls and owns the whole infrastructure. So I think that's the not like I disagree with you, but like no, the same time. Well,
I find antitrust lawsuits just funny in general because the government is the number one monopoly in the United States.
Well, they are right. The
thing that they're like, no, we should protect everybody from that, except for us. Like, definitely don't worry about us. You know,
I mean, look at the banking industry. I mean, if you look at like, what's the Federal Reserve Bank? We, the United States and all our assets, borrow money from a privately held bank to lend out at interest to everybody. Like, where did that come from?
Yeah.
But that's a whole different topic, isn't
right.
it? Because
it is. You know,
they like what they control. Yeah. They don't like
also,
it.
They all, like, the government is also responsible for the vast majority of monopolies that have happened in the past, like through their own regulations. So I look at it as like, you know, you're asking a problem causer to come in and like solve the issue, right? That's never going to happen.
So, Chris, what's your take on this, Chris?
It reminds me of like WordPress versus SaaS in a way, and one of the differences here, like you can choose if you want something more open, go to WordPress. If you want something more open, go to Google and Android. But if you want the walled garden, go with the SaaS or go with Apple. I think the nuance here is that there's a lot of different content SaaS companies out there, but there's only one Apple. And so but they do have a competitor with Google. It's different. The model's different, but it is another option. So I think for me, it's not, I don't have a problem with Apple being what it is and letting the consumer vote with their dollars and just make their personal choice.
Yeah, I think this could have been avoided a bit, but I think under Tim Cook, he's made the company extremely profitable, one of the most profitable enterprises on the planet. But I think under his stewardship, he's just kind of pushed things and it's kind of led to this. But I don't think the case is, I also agree with Kevin to some degree. It's the actual, the whole totality of what they've outlined. I think they're going to have some problems, but I'm not a legal expert. So, Kurt, what was your thoughts about this? Do you think there's any traction in this, or do you sense that they're going to have some problems if it gets in front of a court?
I don't think they care if they have problems personally, Jonathan. I think the whole thing really is just a distraction for us. Like, the government wants a little extra change in their pockets. They go after someone like Facebook or Google or Apple. They say, whatever the fine is, pay it, it's done. I mean, we're talking about a company whose cost of production for an iPhone is like $10, and then they sell it to people that camp outside overnight for $1,500. I mean, money's irrelevant at this point. And I think it's about, they're looking for public perception and they're looking to see like activity happen in headlines. But I don't think in the end, it's going to change anything. I think it just perpetuates and they just keep the story going.
Yeah, but I think, I totally understand where you're coming from and I agree. But it, you know, what happened to Microsoft and their problems with the DOJ did really affect Microsoft, had long-term consequences for Microsoft. Obviously, they've recovered from those consequences, but for a period of time, it did affect their bottom line and what they could get up to. But it would just be interesting to see, won't it? So on we go.
We bring up an interesting point, though, Jonathan. I think we can all remember running down to Best Buy or Circuit City or whatever store's out of business now, and paying $5,000 or $7,000 for some cool computer, and we brought it home and it did nothing. Like, you turned it on and it did nothing, had nothing in it. And people weren't happy, right? And now you have all these gadgets that come to us that are loaded with all these toys and features, and you can do something with it when you take it out of the box. So I don't think people are pissed about that. I'd like, they're getting what people get what they want. And if these exorbitant companies with their profits have to kick in a couple billion here or there to make Uncle Sam happy in the process, I think that's just the way it's going to be.
Yeah. On we go. On to the next story. Quickly is done. Here's what the community has to say about it. This was a surprising event that happened at the beginning of the month. Quickly, and its founder, Louis decided to shut the business down. So, Kevin,
You've had a bit of time to reflect. I know you had an interview with Louis, which was really interesting. So you've had a little bit of time to think about, because you made a very public statement on, which I thought was well thought out, Kevin. So have you had any time to think about some of the things that you've stated on your blog and publicly?
No, I mean, I don't think that, I don't think I contributed in any way to that. I mean, it is what it is. We don't know to this point, you know, the real reason, the stated reasons for quickly shutting down don't make sense. So we don't know what the real reasons are. All we can do is speculate. And I don't know how much value there is in speculation, but you know, I could outline reasons why I think quickly was struggling, but not, that's still not a reason to shut it down, because it was also, even though it was struggling, it was also gaining traction rapidly, actually at the point in which they pulled the plug on it. So I think quickly was at its highest point when they pulled the plug, which it was trending in the right direction, which is the worst time to pull the plug on it. So I don't know. But, you know, if you want to talk about reasons why it was struggling in the first place, you know, happy to outline what I think was going on there. But other than that, it's all speculation.
Yeah, I think, you know, I like to talk about that discussion you had online with him, because I watched it and it was very similar. I recently had Jamie on my podcast and it was a bit spicy, but it was a respectful conversation, and Kirk, I think, found it interesting, didn't you, Kirk, as my co-host? I think your discussion with Louis, I think you were extremely respectful, and I just sensed, watching the interview, he was extremely frustrated. And of course, it's his second language, isn't it? You know, he's fluent, unlike me. I think he's native language is French and English is his second language, and he's very fluent in it, but it is his second language. But I just felt he was just very frustrated. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree. It was a little bit unexpected, because, you know, I'd watched him on live streams and such before, and he just seems, you know, he's very calm on most of his all of his videos. And so yeah, and I could tell it wasn't a communication thing, it was a philosophical thing, you know? And no doubt, like, he put a tremendous amount of work into that Tailwind integration, like an insane amount of work. And if you put that amount of work into something and then somebody else doesn't really understand the vision for it or pushes back on the vision for it. But I mean, objectively, again, we get into this of like, the decisions made and why quickly was struggling. Objectively, I don't think that the Tailwind integration was a good thing to put that kind of, you know, money and time and attention into in the first place, just like a few of quickly's other features and UX decisions and things like that. And I think if you have a struggling platform and you put that much into a single feature set, and then maybe, you know, it doesn't get the reception that you would hope for. You get very dejected. I don't know. Again, all we can do is speculate. But I think that just going the Tailwind route was a gigantic risk. And when I called that a 2% feature, I called it a 2% feature because I legitimately feel like, and I think it's fairly objective, that about 2% of Quickly's users would get value out of that. Everybody else would be in, you know, a decision-making mode of like, do I use this? Do I not use this? Which now creates another onboarding issue for Quickly's, and Quickly already had a series of onboarding issues. So we're just layering yet another major one on top of that. It just, you know, it. If I was advising, I would have just said no. Like the Tailwind integration thing, you know, entertain that later, not now. Like, Quickly has some bigger issues to deal with now.
So, Kirk, what did you, have you got any thoughts on this?
I never used Quickly. So it was one of those where it was like, hey, Quickly's closing down. And I was like, oh, that's a shame. But when you look at what it does to the ecosystem, what it does to the community, and you see people's reactions to it, that to me kind of got me keyed in a little bit more. I hate to see a tool that was successful. I mean, how do we rate successful, right? Just like Kevin said, it seemed to me that they were trending the right way. And so when it shut down, I was surprised. But thank goodness it didn't affect my agency. We weren't using it.
Yeah. So, Spence, any thoughts about this?
First of all, I wanted to say, not that he needs to hear another pat on the back because I'm already his pal, I think, but like, I really appreciated how Kevin handled the situation, because I think that all that any of us can ever do as human beings in the business world is to take responsibility for what we've said and done and own it. And that's why I appreciated his offering and his gestures that didn't need to be done, because I think that went a long way towards further establishing what's already good credibility that you've got in the community, Kevin. I appreciate that. As far as Quickly itself, I think I heard something on the My First Million podcast. Sean Puri was indicating this is a formula for why solopreneurs, entrepreneurs succeed or fail sometimes. It's one thing to give 10 out of 10 effort to an idea, but you need a 10 out of 10 idea to apply it to. So if you've got something, even if it's trending upwards, that's like a 2 out of 10 or 3 out of 10 for potential or hassle or the politics of dealing with all these ungrateful bastards in the WordPress community, 10 out of 10 effort isn't going to win. And you reach a point where you probably say, like, I'm just going to go get a job, or I'm going to go do something else. And my suspicion after having many do-overs in WordPress and otherwise is that that might be at the heart of this. And we've seen it from famous people in our community, like Pippin Williamson, who's admitted, like, he had a multi-million-dollar business, and now Kurt is drinking with him. He decided to sell out because he'd rather do something else with his time, his frustration, and now he brews beer and hangs out with Kurt, and it's a better match. So I think that that's the underlying thing here, is that I know many, many other creators, and we've all had gotten together in word camps and talked about it, who have really successful businesses, 7 figures and up sometimes. And they're like, there's got to be more to do than this. So especially with the page builder community being so intense with a few big companies and a few big things, it doesn't seem unreasonable. Now, as far as him checking out, like, it's like Seinfeld last season. You know what I mean? It's like, are they going to make another season? No, because it can't get any better. And it just, you're not going to come back once you've decided to leave. That's it.
Yeah, I think you made some good points. So Chris, I think Louis got some criticism about the way it was closed down, but I think the people that were criticizing, I've got to be careful in how I word this, maybe not. I think they're a bit, when it comes to business, they're a bit naive. You know, it's a small company, it's a new product, you're going for the ride. Should you be totally committed to building out large websites on a kind of quasar new platform? I wouldn't be so eager myself, but I am a little bit, which is a surprise, Kurt. I'm a bit conservative about all this. What's your own, because, you know, you're there, you've built a business as a co-founder, you've got the arrows in your back and you've had to pull them out, Chris. You got any insights maybe why Louis just sod it and off?
Well, first I'll say there are a lot of critics on the internet. So
you don't say, Chris.
And there's
a lot. Are you talking about the certain fan base that love me so much, Chris?
That's just part of doing business in public and especially on the internet. And a lot of people have a lot of ideas and stuff. I didn't follow Quickly closely, but I'm left with the question of, like, why didn't they sell? And I know I've seen many founders go through it where it's not working. They actually have an asset they can sell. Maybe somebody else has different ideas and can do something with it. But I would pose that question, and maybe Kevin, you might have this answer from your interview, which I'd like to watch with Louis, but why didn't he sell? And somebody else pick up the baton and do their thing, even one of his customers or users. Why shut it down?
Yeah. Yeah, we can only speculate, but it quickly was a product built by him and his family. And I think he saw it as like his baby, most likely. And he, in it, what it felt like, given the announcement and all of that, was like, if I can't run it, nobody's going to run it. You know, it's like, I'm just going to kill it. Right. It's like, and we don't know why the reaction was the way that it was really, but if he felt like nobody appreciates it or not enough people appreciate it, then like, I'm not just going to sell it and let somebody else do something else to it. Like, I'm just going to kill it. I don't think he needed the money. I don't think he needed anything that was behind it. It was a passion project. That's, if I had to guess, that's the thing. So, you know, he didn't, there was, if he needed the money, then he probably would have tried to sell it, but I don't think he does.
Wow. Put a lot of work into it though, didn't he? But there we go. Yeah. Who knows? Well, we're going to go. I wish him well though. He seems a great guy to me. I hope he will gather the wagons, and when he feels a bit more enthusiasm, he doesn't totally leave the WordPress space, because that would be sad, really, wouldn't it? But I wish him well. So we're going to go for our mid-break, folks. We've got a few more stories. We'll be back in a few moments, folks.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Lifter LMS, the leading learning management system solution for WordPress. If you or your client are creating any kind of online course, training-based membership website, or any type of e-learning project, Lifter LMS is the most secure, stable, well-supported solution on the market. Go to lifterlms.com and save 20% at checkout with coupon code podcast20. That's podcast20. Enjoy the rest of your show.
We're coming back, folks. We've got some great other stories. We've had a good first half. Just want to point out that we do a great newsletter, weekly newsletter, where, like this show, I promote the best WordPress and tech stories of the week. Plus, I'll write a quick commentary myself. You can get this, and it's totally free. And please do sign up by going over to wp-tonic.com/newsletter. wp-tonic/newsletter, and sign up, and it will be in your inbox every week. What more could you ask for? My thoughts in your inbox.
Dollar.
I knew I was going to get a great comment from Spencer there. We discussed this last month and we thought it wasn't so red edit. Self-anointed front page of the internet soars Wall Street Depot. We thought Heather, who was joined us and unfortunately couldn't join us this month, but she joined us last month from Antarctica, which was very impressive. She did understand. And I think also Spencer, it seems initially to be a great success. And then we got Truth Social going to go public as well. So Spencer, I think, I don't want to speak for you, but I think you agreed with Heather. It was all a bit the market's enthusiasm for this public offering, but I don't make any sense of it. What do you make of it? There seems to be an initial pop here.
When I was a younger man, I enjoyed much of my 30s traveling to and from a little town called Las Vegas, and spent a lot of time enjoying what Las Vegas had to offer in the 90s. And part of that was the notion that when in Vegas, everything was different than in the real world. I used to call it, like, I'd get to the airport and I'd say, I'm on Vegas time, Vegas budget, because now things are a little different. But like literally, because you could gamble and because those days they would comp me and so forth, I could go to Vegas and do things that I didn't record, or thank God there weren't smartphones at the time, because I knew that it was a net game of finances or whatever, memories. Now, the stock market and all of the recent trends of things like NFTs and cryptocurrency and the blah, 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 blah. These are all examples of the real world Las Vegas, where there's a subset of people in the world who have the capital or the desire or live in Silicon Valley, where they got to get their payday. And so that's how it is that Alexis Ohanian, who's now 40 and started this when I think it was like 24 or something, finally get their payday, that something that loses $700 million is suddenly worth billions. It's because people just want to bet on the roulette wheel, on the crap table of this, make their money and get the hell out. And that's what will happen here, because there has to be somebody. The only exception to this rule recently might be something like Twitter, which wasn't because of an IPO, but it's because like Elon Musk is a singular human being who could throw 40 whatever billion dollars at something that's a loser and end up maybe making it into something. But no mortals are going to do that. We saw that with Yahoo, with Marissa Mayer. We've seen this so many times. We saw with that company Color that the dude took in like $500 million and flushed it down the toilet on a weekend and nobody held him accountable. So that's my thought. My thought is that this is just people who have money to invest, hyping it up, making a shit ton of money, and then they're going to get the hell out. Now, I use Reddit every day. I love it for a resource. No way do I think it's worth that. I mean, you could go to a free blog to get the same info if enough people showed up.
Yeah, Chris, I don't totally disagree with Spencer, but I think one of the drivers here is the data set, and through artificial intelligence, obviously, I think these social networks, one of the reasons, I think it is a classical pump and dump of a public offering. There's a pop and it's underwritten by normally a commercial bank, and this is unusual, but I think the other driver is the data set and the possibility of actually making some real money from these social platforms. What do you reckon of what I've just outlined, or do you think it's just like what Spencer said, it's just gambling, basically?
I think the data set is the main event here. So whoever's, like, that's, I think, an obvious next play is licensing of the data to feed the language models this large user site with a huge history of conversations with real humans talking about issues to train models. In terms of the pump and dump, I don't know, but in the future, you know, whether it's Facebook or Reddit or Twitter or Gmail or Google, they have all this real human conversation, and that's how you train great models.
Sorry, what do you reckon?
Sorry. One of the things that's different about Reddit, unlike Quora has been infested with bots. Reddit is not bots, but keep in mind, the nature of the type of people who like to consume Reddit, they're very snarky, anti-marketing. You know, they have antibiotics in their system for marketing. So, like, to take the data and feed it into AI would be really disruptive to an algorithm of saying this is how people think and talk.
But it's real human data. It's real.
There's so much I could remark about that. So I'm just going to throw it over to Kevin, because I've had criticism that I talk too much in this monthly show. So, Kevin, you know, do you think, so what Spencer says is if they use Reddit as a data model, God help us. What do you reckon, Kevin?
Yeah, I could see that, actually. I could see the value in that for data modeling, for sure.
It's ugly vision, isn't it?
Yeah, it would end up being unfortunate data modeling, but it is data modeling nonetheless. If I liked Reddit, I could probably give you, a reason for this valuation, but I don't. And if Spencer likes it and thinks it's gambling, then I've just got to agree that it's got to be. If it's not data, then it's got to be gambling, because I just think it's a terrible platform and terrible experience. And so, I don't see the value in it for sure.
I agree with what you're saying. I'm making a metaphor about the reason that the stock went up. It's nothing to do with the value of the actual right. product or the data.
Correct.
The second part about the data is I find it's ironic because I like to think of myself as something curious about human behavior, if not an expert. And the behavior on Reddit is distinctly unique. Like if you put an ad in Reddit, because they do offer ads, good luck. You might as well just throw your money out the car because nobody is going to respond to it. Whereas if you go into Facebook, somebody might actually be the type of person who responds.
It's the only platform that can make advertising on X look logical, isn't it?
The thing with the, you know, what we're talking about with the quality of the data that I guess is the fundamental problem is, you know, do people on Reddit behave on Reddit differently than they behave elsewhere? And I hope so, Kevin, because
we're in big trouble if we don't.
So really you're getting people's like pseudo personality or, you know, this like anonymous personality where it's like,
I think you've seen too much in it. I think it's called whiskey, Kevin. I think it's whiskey that feels red in it. You know, it's the only platform that can make X look, the people on X make them look reasonable in my opinion, but there we go. I might be disjointed there. I'm going to let Kirk to the next story. So I'm just going to move on. So don't be upset with me, Kurt. On to the next story. And it's funny how me and Kirk, you know, Kirk's mind, he moderates me. And I was in two minds having this story, but then I thought, yes. And then Kirk brought it to my attention. Bluehost announces a new cloud hosting built on WP Cloud. And in my opinion, I thought this was could be the most boring story ever put on WP Tavern. I actually thought this could be. And then Kirk said, people got a little bit upset by this story. So Kirk, can you give an outline of what this is about? But I think it is possibly the most boring story that's ever been published.
Author got paid $25.
Wow. So, Kirk.
Yep, that's what Matt's paying for this story.
Go on, Kirk. What did you think of this story, Kirk?
I love that you called me out on our private conversation there, Jonathan.
It wasn't too private, was it?
But my thought about the story as I read it was like,
you've got to get some arrows framed. You can't just be my co-host and don't get any pay, Kirk. I'm sorry. It's not fair.
I was a Bluehost customer for like 16 years. And so I was reading this article.
Is that why you got no hair?
That's why I got no hair. And I will say during that 16 years, they did answer my, you know, customer service requests and all those things. I actually had a pretty decent experience until I got that one surprise invoice. But as I read the article, I was like, I thought there was like a contest to be a really good writer for this platform. Like as I read it, I was like, I thought there was like six or seven people vying to work for this and like make original content. And as I'm reading it, I'm like, is it AI? Like who, and who is this? And I was like, this reads like a commercial. And I took it in by myself, not angry or overly critical or anything like that. But then I read some of the comments and then I went to like Twitter and I started looking for comments and I was like, oh my goodness, this person is getting absolutely killed over this article. Because everybody's like, why is this bold advertisement being pushed as a post? It's like reading, if I were to quote Jonathan, it would be like reading a post from the Chocolate Factory about one of their wonderful products.
Yes, yeah, the Blessed Chocolate Factory, Willy Wonka, WordPress. But I think there's a deeper story here, Kevin. It's the bizarre, well, maybe not so bizarre relationship of Automattic with the company behind the beloved Bluehost. You know, they've got the beloved leader has fallen out publicly with the big daddy, but he seems to have a love fest with Bluehost, doesn't he? And Automattic do. So there's a bigger story behind this, isn't there, Kevin? Or would you not? You would disagree?
Yeah. Well, no, I'm sure. I mean, it's the larger a company gets, and it as partners and friends and all that stuff.
Friends. It's all about friends, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, it's like a politician gets elected and his brother gets, you know, the nice next contract. It's just, I don't know. It is the way that it is in the world.
So I'm a hosting provider, but I don't think I'm going to be promoted on WP Tavern, am I, any day soon? Very unlikely, isn't it, Kevin? So, Spencer, do you think this is possibly the most boring story that was ever published on the Tavern?
Well, first of all, I was really happy to learn because I didn't know that the Bluehost is the only cloud platform built from the ground up just for WordPress.
You don't say.
There's other 658 companies apparently have not been building it for WordPress. But other than that, Newfold Digital owns...
Well, we got news. Bluehost explains it at 1 PM today. There we go.
Newfold Digital owns this hunk of lead, and previously it was a company owned by a group of individuals who had non-secular motives. So I don't think I can think of any reason why I would ever recommend Bluehost to anybody, unless it's their my worst enemy. But more importantly, as far as
recommending them to me, then obviously.
Well, just because there's so many other better choices, but even from pricing. But the bigger question is definitely like, what has become of the Tavern exactly? Because like, how does this even make the Tavern? Like, I don't want to pick on whoever Jai Lasna is, but like, this is one of the people competing for intriguing stories of the Tavern. I really find this kind of like sad. It's worse than not doing anything. Like, if they had done nothing and shuttered it, it would have been better than this out.
Yes.
This is a waste of opportunity.
Well, this is what you get for, you know, any non-group think in WordPress. You don't get a warm, Kevin will tell you that, you don't get a warm reception if you're not on message, do you, Kevin? You
know, I would like to tie this back to the thing. Remember we just talked about at the beginning, like the flat line, right? Somebody, Leslie Sims, who's very, very creative, and she's got some great products for emailing and stuff. She's a great entrepreneur. She was asking something. Is all the stuff going on now, the like end stage capitalism in WordPress? Now, I don't think that's the case. But what I do think is these stories reflect upon something that is what I will call the fork in the WordPress road. And it also reflects upon the chocolate factory, because that whole thing is blowing up again, and I've exhausted any effort to leave it.
I wish Willy Wonka all the best, actually.
Here's the way I see it. Back to what I refer to like craftsmanship. I see there's a fork in the road now where you reach a state of saturation that WordPress owns enough of the structure, infrastructure, the business is mature. There are going to be those who will use WordPress as the ingredients and do what they're going to do with it. And there are those who will continue to try to sell ingredients into the marketplace, even though it's that flea market. And I think that's the nature of when markets mature. You know, there are clear winners and big fish. And then there are those who are just like, F it, I'm out of here. Like, I'm just going to use it. I don't need to talk about it. And I kind of feel like that's the nature of what I would like to do personally here, is that like, I have no troubles making a really good living without getting into the drama of who's doing what, when, where, and why, because I keep finding these moves to be more like strong arm than ever. Like, so ridiculous. There's no explanation for these things other than... Well, you know what I mean? Like, why argue about why the Federal Reserve Bank is doing what it's doing anymore? I mean, it's long ago been decided they're not going to change, right? Same thing here. Matt is going to do what he does, and Automotive will do what they do.
I still think it's my obligation to take the piss out of him.
But we can all do other things and still get the
piss out of him. I just get delicious delight in taking the piss out of some of these people. And they really, really don't like it. I really, really, it's quite surprising that, you know, no matter how much money you've got and how much power, you still don't like people taking the piss out of you.
It just magnifies your natural insecurities. So the problem is human nature being what it is. I like to say of all the folks here today, I'm not saying we're perfect, but I think all of us have put our credibility, our moral character, our, you know, golden rule first mindset in our businesses. There are those people who have more money they could ever spend, who feel, because of maybe insecurities from childhood or otherwise, that they must win everything at all costs at the expense of treating other people that way. And that's something that I just fundamentally disagree with. And I don't think I'll be quiet about it ever, but I also don't feel like I can win every one of those battles. You know,
all right.
You just do it individually.
Got anything to say about this, Chris, or should I move on to the last story, Chris?
I do. I think what's missing from this conversation is the user. And what does a regular hosting shopper user want? They want one host for life. They want to start cheap. They want to be able to scale later, which is what this managed WordPress hosting plan is for, you know, more resources and better services and stuff like that. I'm surprised Bluehost hasn't done this sooner. The fragmentation in the WordPress hosting market, there's like two business strategies. One is to like focus, like Pagely is high-end hosting. WP Engine's like sitting in the middle.
Bluehost. And then you got WP Tonic. That's for sure.
Yeah.
It's in the management
system. Yes. Yeah. And these are good strategies.
And they're a great partner for your beloved plugin, aren't they?
They are. They are. But the, these, but there's also another strategy, which is like get people in the door when they're a startup and be with them all the way through their customer journey. So I think yeah, that
is a hosting provider. In some ways, I agree with statements that Spencer, that it's been commoditized, but in other ways it isn't because it's all jumbled up with support, knowledge. It's multifaceted. But what gets me about Bluehost and the relationship with Automattic is that relation, and then the relationship with WP with WordPress, is it highlights all the kind of jumbled up witch's brew that are all these relationships in WordPress. It's all smoke and mirrors and deals that people are not aware of if you're not in the chosen few that are in. But it kind of, it's all jumbled up as far as I'm concerned.
So I think the WordPress.org recommended hosting page is its own like separate issue. And maybe that could be democratized and like just literally put them all on there or something like that. But Bluehost has been around a long time. I built my first WordPress website in 2008 with Bluehost. I still do my domain names on Bluehost because that's where I started. And I got to a point with Bluehost where I needed more. So I went to WP Engine and then I needed more and I went to Pagely. But what I'd prefer is if the first host I use, I could just keep using. That's my point.
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from, but I don't agree with you, Chris. I think it's like you've learn a driver, the car you might be driving in to learn to drive. It's not going to be the car that you end up with. So you aspirate to. So on we go. I got into web design in the mid to late 90s. That shows you how old I am, folks. And I got in as a hobby and I came across this site and it kind of influenced CSS tricks. And then this story come up, Chris Coyer, who I've interviewed a couple of times. I haven't spoken to him for a long time, though. Great guy. And then this story comes back. He sold it to DigitalOcean, and now he's trying to persuade them to buy it back. So what do you reckon of this one? I don't know where to start off with, actually.
I'll jump on that.
Oh, go on then, Chris.
Sort of like we were talking about with Quickly, sometimes I've seen a lot of founders who sell their business and then later kind of regret it. And to me, this seems like this is a classic case where he sold the baby and he misses it and he wants to come back and patch up the relationship and like get it going again. And it's a classic thing. So if you're ever thinking about selling your company or part of it or a division of it or a product of it, think twice, because founder like sales regret is just as common as buyers.
Well, I think selling something to DigitalOcean is like selling something to GoDaddy or the chocolate factory. You know, if you're going to sell it, you know, there's no coming back because they just buy stuff and it just dies on the buying basically. So you're selling it to DigitalOcean, whistle it away. And it's the same with the Big Daddy. And it's the same with the Chocolate Factory. If you sell anything to those three entities, goodbye to it. But that's only my opinion. Please do not write to me. It's just my opinion, folks. So, Kevin, I thought this was interesting because I think Chris has also pointed out it's the mixture of a personal brand and a business brand and how you mix it all up and the consequences of mixing them all up, which you have done also, Kevin. I like to point out, Kevin.
A little bit. I mean, I don't know. You know, CSS Tricks is not a personal brand, and that's what, you know, probably made it a lot more sellable. But yeah, I was going to say exactly what Chris said, which was this is probably a perfect example of why Lewis didn't sell quickly. You know, he knows that this is a possibility, and you know, unfortunately, it wasn't just like, you know, what happened with quickly was he more or less destroyed any trust in himself versus like the actual brand of quickly, right?
Yeah.
So now it's like not only can quickly not really come back, it's going to be tough for Lewis to come back with any product. I mean, because, you know, if it's just like a I'm going to take my ball and go home situation, I mean, that could happen to anything he does in the future. Nobody knows now. So, but yeah, it's it is a common thing. And so there are a lot of founders that are just like, if I'm not going to run it, then I'm not going to sell it either. I'm just going to shut it down because it's to them, it's even worse to watch somebody else mangle it or not do something with it or whatever somebody else might do than just to shut the doors.
So what do you reckon, Spencer?
Yeah, I mean, Kevin definitely hit the nail on the head with that last part. So I feel bad for the quickly guy because he really shit the bed on himself. The thing that Chris did with CSS Tricks, I kind of allude to, you know, Jason Cullen, very well known for, I hold him as one of the one or two smartest human beings I've ever met or known personally. And he's done so well with creating companies that grow and scale. But underneath it all, he had suggested the reasons for him selling Smart Bear and then, you know, this other stuff. Is that everybody should have essentially a number in mind that gives them like, not FU, but like gives them peace of mind, security to just go off and do the rest of the stuff for their life. And so I could not begrudge Chris. I'm not sure if 4 million will do it in today's world for never working again, but that's a really, really nice head start. But here's the thing. It doesn't, in my mind, cause as much of a problem because CSS Tricks itself was where I learned CSS. I love that resource, or I did. I haven't been back since he sold it because it's like, well, it's like the tavern if it made money. So the CSS Tricks was a place that had a lot of resources, but he really was the energy. So if I was putting advice out for somebody like Chris, it would be, fuck it. You don't need CSS Tricks. Just make chriscoyer.com
right.
And just everybody will come over there.
Yeah.
And that's it. And I want to allude to a sort of not as close a friend as like Chris, or I haven't met him like Kevin, but like Justin Fahrenman is famous in our community for building LearnDash, right? And Justin went off to do his thing with his money. And he realized, like Chris said, very quickly, like, hey, what you guys doing around the clubhouse? Like, I want to talk about stuff again. You already sold it. Liquid Web owns it. It's too late. And it's really going to be hard to start another LMS. So that is the danger. If you don't have enough money to get like, I'm good for the rest of my life, don't sell it and don't shit the bed like the quickly by describing to people why you're abandoning them. Because the only thing you have is your name and reputation. And if you just held on to it, he could have like said, I got to go on sabbatical for a while and then come back with a new idea.
Well, or do what breakdowns, you know, you start your oxygen and then you say, fuck them. And then you'd start, and then
like money is good. But like, again, I relate it to the things of, I look at things slightly different because of my age and my physical stuff. Like I understand being a multimillionaire, being bankrupt, everything in between. And you have to have something when you get up in the morning that gets you so excited that it doesn't feel like working. Because making money after a while is not enough. And if you make enough money that your needs are covered, you're definitely going to go out of your mind unless you have something. So why throw away 10 years, 20 years of goodwill unless the money's enough to be like, fine, I sold my children downstream. You know.
Well, yeah, I think, yeah, this, yeah, I see where you're coming from, but there's a middle road. You just got to accept that you sold it for a ton of money and you're not going to go back. And it might be, you know, the Chris, you know, you're absolutely spot on, but it might be in the contract that he signed that he can't actually do that without DigitalOcean's permission. He probably can't enter, because there's other people that would probably like to enter the WordPress space again, and they can't because they've signed a contract with, you know.
I mean, that's what companies do, by the way. Some people buy stuff to kill them.
Yeah.
I'm not saying DigitalOcean did that because it doesn't make any sense.
If you want to buy anything I'm producing,
it is their right
to sell completely, folks. Buy the bridge.
They have a right to pay.
I'm a cheap digital whore. I'm a cheap.
$4 million and erase the hard drive. I mean, if they wanted, they could take the whole thing offline, or they could sell the data to AI for actual real good data. That would be good data. But like right now, they don't seem that interested because DigitalOcean is making $250 billion with their hosting business. And they do a really good job of it. I mean, I like Cloudways and so forth. But like, this is one of those things that's sitting on a shelf collecting dust versus an entrepreneur like a Chris or Justin or whomever who's really passionate doing it every day. They need somebody passionate. That's why the tavern isn't going to go anywhere. There's no passion when you did Hunger Games for $25. Nobody gives a hoot about that. It's the same idea. So
just two quick points. I just wanted to add on what Spencer said about taking a sabbatical. If you're ever thinking about selling, that's a really smart move. And you're basically trying on retirement and you can get a lot of the benefits in like a month, 2 months, 3 months. And the other thing, I also look up to Jason Cohen as a smart business dude. And what he did at WP Engine is he brought in a CEO. So he kind of stepped, he was the founder of WP Engine. He ran it. He brought in the CEO. He went to the part of the company he enjoys the most, which I think is in the product side or the innovation engineering side, and focuses there. So you have a lot of options besides selling.
Yeah, I think that's greatly put.
Or closing the doors overnight. Yes.
Yeah.
There's options, isn't it? So, beloved panels. So let's start with our beloved guest. Hopefully you will return. I've really enjoyed your input, Kevin. Hopefully. You seem to have laughed at some of my jokes. Not all.
Yeah, we had fun.
So, Kevin, what's the best way for people to find out more about you and what you're up to?
Yeah, everything is at geary.co.
Right, that was nice and simple. Spencer. Yeah. Spencer. Yeah, short and sweet. That's Kevin. Short.
I'm everywhere.
Sweet, but short. There we go. So, Spencer, what's...
I'm at wblaunchfight.com or Spencer Foreman, no E. But what we're not going to do anything about it. I was sad that this week we didn't have a conversation about that one developer who put the poison pill in his code in order to shut everybody's sites down because he thought they were nulling his plugin. I really thought that it was in the blocks community. And that guy, if you want to talk about shitting the bed, like, it's over.
I haven't heard it. I can't follow it. Oh, I'm too busy running.
You missed that story, but like, that was a good story. We could talk about it.
Producing video, writing content, running two companies. I'm a bit busy. I can't follow this, man. It's just bonkers stuff.
It would have been better than the Bluehost segment. I will get
right, we could have been talking about that.
Right. Chris, what's the best way for people to find out more about you and what you're up to?
You can find me at lifterlms.com, Chris Badgett on Twitter. And if you like podcasts, check out my podcast, LMS Cast. It's a lot more educational and less spicy than this one, but check that out if you're into all things online education and building sites for that.
Yep. And if you're looking to publicize your plugin, your WordPress service to a dedicated and law audience, why don't you think about sponsoring the WP Tonic podcast? And you can find more by going over to wp-tonic/sponsors, wp-tonic.com/sponsors, and your support would be well welcomed. We will be back next month with another spicy roundtable. We'll see you soon, folks. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening. We really do appreciate it. Why not visit the Mastermind Facebook group? And also, to keep up with the latest news, click wp-tonic.com/newsletter. We'll see you next time.